Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Book Spectrum. I'm your host, Chris Cordani. On Book Spectrum, we discuss an array of book genres we find interesting and believe you will as well. From philosophy to self-help to history to thrilling fiction, we span the spectrum of new books out there. With me now is an author you will recognize from the silver screen. She starred in several movie classics, How the West Was Won, Baby Doll, and many more. The list is too long to just put in this intro. We'll talk about some of those later on. She's known as a screen baby doll and is here with me now to talk about her rather intense thriller, her fourth book, Who Killed Big Al? Carol Baker, welcome to Book Spectrum.
Thank you, and hello to all of your audience.
I'm glad to have you here because not only do we have a star of the big screen here, but somebody who is a quite accomplished writer. You've been writing for a little while. I mentioned it's your fourth book.
Yes, it is my fourth book. The other three, the first one was entitled Baby Doll because it was an autobiography. And the second one was... I had made a very long trip to Africa, very interesting, very long trip, and I wrote a book called To Africa with Love. And the other book was I had lived in Rome for 20 years, so I wrote a book about Rome, but that was during the La Dolce Vita time. So I made it a novel. I didn't make it autobiographical in any way.
And this isn't autobiographical either. At least I hope not. To be honest with you.
No.
Who killed Big Al? You didn't do it, did you? Who Killed Big Al, again, your fourth book. For centuries, murder mysteries have been authored, yet the genre never gets stale. I mean, we're talking about a centuries-old genre, like I just said. As writers continue to imagine up interesting scenarios, character developments, and perhaps insert their own experiences into their stories, what from both your brain and your life inspired the entire story, or at least part of it, Who Killed Big Al?
Well, I have to tell you that it came totally from my imagination. You know, I believe that when you write, actually, there have been books that have put forth this system, is that you don't sit down in front of a blank piece of paper or sit at the computer and do nothing. You wait until the inspiration strikes you. It's the stream of consciousness. And with this, I actually wrote it nonstop 2 days. I don't know why I was inspired to write it, but I do know that I love Agatha Christie. And in some ways, I felt she was a little bit old-fashioned. So I decided to do what people expect in a murder mystery, and then to turn it on its head, turn it upside down, so that it is really totally unconventional. You can't guess what's coming next.
I do see the influence and tributes to Agatha Christie throughout the book, Carol. Right down to the constable in charge of finding out who committed the titular murder, he was a lot like Hercule Poirot.
Oh, yes, but, you see, I have to be very careful. I don't think there's anyone who's protected more than Agatha Christie. I couldn't use any of the names or anything that she used. I had to be very careful. Now, one movie producer that I gave the book to, he came back to me and said, Carol, I'm never going to have dinner with you again.
So, yeah, you learn how to mix a lot of poisons, it sounds like, from the book.
What? He said, how do you know about all these poisons? There's the poison on the tree and the poison in the grain and the poison in the flower and the poison. And I said, listen, it wasn't me. Agatha Christie did all this research. I just copied her.
You didn't have a recipe book of poison sitting in your no, list of books you wrote.
No, but if you read my book, you can find a recipe.
There we go. Yes, it's in there. That's true. Who Killed Big Al is the book. My guest is Carol Baker here on Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani, your host. We're going to take you on a ride through this book. It's not a simple mystery, nor is this a simple cast of characters, Carol. I want you to take us to where and when the story takes place. The 1970s, actually, was it 1970? Escape Island, a fictional paradise near the coast of Canada.
Yes, I wanted it to be a little bit British. So without being in Britain, you can be a little bit British if you're Canadian. And I didn't name the island because there are several very famous islands off the coast of Canada.
You can make your own island and do whatever you want with it. That's why I like the name Escape Island. And it's kind of where people, it's where the Baron escaped to, if you will.
Yes, yes.
What aspects of Escape Island? Again, you made the island up, so I'm pretty sure you had some of this in your brain already. What aspects of Escape Island might have been based on a place or some areas you have lived or visited before, Carol?
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a very good question, and it's interesting because I learned something long ago, and I used it as one of the important plots within the story. And that is that the island has no more money, and they have a scheme that they're going to sell off small portions of the island for people to have their own little cabin, their own little vacation place. And when the first time that I was in Round Hill in Jamaica, I learned that the British actors who wanted to go on vacation got together and they all put in a certain sum of money, but the cabin was theirs, but they could also rent it when they didn't use it. And that was the pattern that I used, that the Baron was going to make some money, the way he was going to make some money, and maybe get some interesting people involved.
Yeah, he might even allow some of these guests to put together timeshares. That could be scary in and of itself, too, but that's a different story for a different day.
I don't know. I've never done a timeshare.
I don't want to give away the plot on Book Spectrum here. Our listeners are going to have to read Who Killed Big Al, but let's take a look at some of the characters they'll find between the pages. Chapter 1. We meet the Baron and his lady. Baron, like you said, he wants to sell parts of Escape Island to potential investors. And we meet some of the domestic help in Chapter 2, and then we meet the guests.
Yes, we meet the guests.
They're seemingly the typically quirky, very rich North American aristocrats of the time. Almost modern or relatively modern Gatsby-esque characters. At least that's from what I got reading it, because there's just so much to them besides what's on the surface.
Yes. Well, the thing is, you know, as an actress, for years I have studied the people and how they behave and why they behave the way they do and so forth. Also, I've been very interested all my life in anthropology. And some of these characters, they just came to me and I thought, oh, yes, this is a very unusual character. And he does exist. I know he does exist because I've seen people somewhat similar to him. And then I would put the character down on paper.
Carol Baker is with me on Book Spectrum. We're talking about her book, Who Killed Big Al? It's her fourth one. These are kind of funny characters and a little, they're characters you can see on the surface that are kind of, that might be a little tough to deal with sometimes as well. But some of them have a real dark side to them and some of them have weird ties to each other. It's kind of like a triple mystery, a life mystery within a murder mystery within a, hey, I got to figure out how all this is tied together mystery. And that's what makes it even more interesting than just a regular whodunit.
Yeah, well, that's part of the fun of it. As I say, you are used to, if you read mysteries, you're used to following a certain line. And It starts out, I start out with that certain line that everybody's familiar with, and then I turn it completely on its head. And you say, wow, how could that happen? One of my favorite characters, I saw a show with this character in it, and I loved it. I just changed what he did and what he looked like and so forth. And it's the major. The major is totally broke, and his wife, Lorraine, is a very suffering lady. he manages to get the invitation because he's that's what he does in life. He finds places where he can scrounge around and make some money, do something. So they get invited, and she is so nervous because she says, you know, we don't fit in with this crowd. We haven't got the money to buy anything here. What are we doing? He said, don't worry, darling. Don't worry. I've everything worked out. She said, well, I don't even have anything to wear. This is an important, beautiful house. They're going to have dinner, and I have nothing to wear. He said, I'll take care of it. So he goes in, and he talks to the woman who's in charge of the house. Her name is Dorothy. And he says to her, oh, you know, we lost our luggage at the airport. I don't know what happened. We lost our luggage. And my poor darling wife is so upset because she has nothing to wear for dinner. So Dorothy, who is in charge, does not want to lose these people who she thinks has money. So she said, oh, we'll have the store on the island send over whatever your wife would like. I'll give her the number, and she'll give them her size. They'll describe what they have, and they will send her clothes. So those are the sort of things he does.
Major James Hurley, he was quite the charmer and con man. He didn't know what he was doing, I'll tell you that. And Lorraine is kind of, I noticed the tension from her, but really, she kind of fit in as well, Ed Sue. And of course, there was a lot more to her than you saw as well.
Yeah, so she's a long-suffering wife, but she wasn't stupid. Not at all.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now let's go to the titular character. In the beginning, you really make this guy unlikable. And I mean really unlikable. He's like, he's what kids today would call a pig. All right?
Yes.
Now I will say I appreciate a guy in a nice suit. A guy who knows how to dress. And that's what Al was too. So as awful as Big Al was, okay? How did you go about the challenge of taking this character you created? I mean, really, if you read the book, listeners out there, you're going to read the book, you're going to find this guy is somebody. Why the heck would I even want this guy here? Aside from the money end, of course. You created this guy. How did you make the readers care about who killed him and why?
Yes, there's a hint here and a hint there and a hint somewhere else. Everybody really would like to kill him because he's so obnoxious.
Right. But you made him likable. You made me as a reader want to care about who killed this guy. And obviously the reasons are they stem from the other characters as well. But yes, this guy was terrible, unlikable, an awful human being. Somebody I would not even want to be near at this thing. I might have had a motive or two on this guy. But the fact is you made me curious and made me feel bad for the guy a little bit too here.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's a wonderful reaction.
But I was supposed to hate him too. How do you make a character like that missed by a reader? That's what I'm asking.
Oh, all right. I was influenced by Born Yesterday, Garson Kanin's play. and the fat guy there who, you know, she had to say to him, "I wasn't born yesterday," because he gives her all this guff. So I thought about him, but then I made him 100 times worse. I gave him every disgusting habit you can possibly have.
He could run for office, I guess, but that's a different story for a different day.
Yeah.
Enter the constable, who wound up being hired to be there for, I guess, security reasons, that sort of thing. There was, and we talked about this before, there was a bit of Hercule Poirot in him. The Christie references, that makes the story a little bit more fun. But again, you think if you're reading, hey, this kind of is very Christie-esque, but a lot of different stuff. Tell me about the constable and how you kind of fit him in to make him more of a, to kind of give people the Agatha Christie effect, but put it in a Carol Baker novel.
Oh, gosh. That's really a loaded question. Yeah, he is a fabulous character. And he does come out and say that Hercule Poirot is his hero, that nobody can talk about. I was allowed to say that. That's his hero. Her detective, Hercule Poirot, was his hero. And he does things, when he questions people, he does it exactly the way he thinks Hercule would do it.
Carol Baker is with me on Revenge of the 80s Radio. She's a star of the silver screen, but an author as well. She has written 4 books. We're talking about her newest, Who Killed Big Al? What was your thought process when building these characters and then revealing who they really were to the reader?
It just came to me. As I said, you know, I had read some books about how you write, and the way sometimes it comes to you in your dreams. You wake up in the morning, and it's the stream of consciousness that is the important thing. So what you do technically is you just begin to write. You don't let that flow stop for any reason. You don't think about the spelling. You don't think about the punctuation. You don't think about what sentence should go before the other sentence. That is all. That's the tough work. That's what you do when you've got the storyline down. And that's technical. Anybody can do that. You can go through and find out, you know, what words are spelled wrong, or if it's a phrasing is not correct or something like that can always be done. And you can get somebody to help. There are wonderful people who can help you with that, too.
But again, like writing any kind of a television program, you can have a lot of fun with the characters in the first few episodes and maybe the first season. You have to develop these people. You have to make people want to tune in, want to keep turning the pages if you're writing a book. And learning more,
yes,
about these characters. That's not easy in a whodunit, because the whodunit usually is based on the mystery. This is more character driven, and that's what makes this a lot more fun to read. More of a roller coaster. You learn about the help, you learn about the big guys, from the Major to Jerome to the Baron to Dorothy.
Oh, that's wonderful. My goodness. Yeah, I should record you and have, and every time I go out to sell a book, I should put your recording on. You really got the essence of this book. I'm just so delighted.
Well, you put this interview on your page. There we go. People.
Yes, right.
I'm curious, though. You've been in movies for a very long time, obviously. Might have there been any influence or perhaps shout-outs, references from your movies or styles of any of your former directors or co-stars within the pages of Who Killed Big Al?
No, I don't think so. When I wrote my first book, the autobiography, I was living in Great Britain at the time, and I had a beautiful garden. I lived in a very special place called Chalcot Gardens, and other famous people lived there, like Sting and Carol Rice, the famous director. And I was strolling in my garden, because at the moment I didn't have any work. So I was strolling in my garden, and I started to think about Jimmy Dean. And I said, well, you know, a lot of those young kids who wrote about James Dean and pretended they knew him so well were really off base. They were just using it to get their name out there. But I really knew him because I went to the Actors Studio with him. And when we first started in Giant, he and I were pals. We were together because we knew one another. So that is really the thing that kicked off that book. The thing that kicked off the murder mystery was the fact that I was interested in doing... I've written also plays that haven't gotten put on and television shows that haven't gotten put on. Oh, but one thing I did do when I came back from Vietnam with the USO tour, I wrote a diary, and it was in the a New York newspaper, and I was very proud of that. So at any rate, we're walking in this garden, and then I thought, well, you know, it's not just Jimmy and me. It's all these fascinating people. I mean, Elizabeth Taylor. You know, there was never anybody like Elizabeth Taylor. And I had my own theory on her. Nobody could understand why she did such crazy things. And my theory was that she was a child of MGM. She was raised at MGM. And everything in her life, she compared to a movie at MGM. She didn't think the way the rest of us did. And it was true. That's why she was so extravagant, so extraordinary, and why we were just so fascinated by her.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Carol Baker is with me on Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani, your host. We're talking about Who Killed Big Al, but, well, we got into your other life, where you were most well-known, Carol. So let's give our audience a bit of that. As I said before, most of our listeners know you from your movies. What brought you into acting in the first place?
I was a child of the Depression, and it took us a long time to recover. I think like most families, we began to recover when there was a war economy. But I was unable to do the things possibly that I dreamed of doing. Like I would love to have been an anthropologist and traveled all over strange places in the world and discovered people. So in a way, that has to do with acting, because what you're doing is you're digging into the core of somebody and trying to reproduce it as truthfully as you possibly can. So when I was graduated from high school, the boy that I was in love with, the first boy that I was ever in love with, he was going to college. My dearest girlfriend was going to college. All the other girls I knew were going to college. I was working in a war factory. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not gonna do this. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go to New York, and there something is going to happen to me. Well, the only thing that I had some specialty in was dancing, because I had been going to dancing school. So after my factory job, I would go up in our attic, which the floor was destroyed anyway, didn't matter. And I would dance and dance and dance and practice and practice, mainly tap dancing. So then my mother and father divorced, and my mother went to St. Petersburg, Florida. And I loved them both dearly. I didn't really want to choose. But my mother said, you know, come to St. Petersburg, Florida. At least maybe you'll find something to do there, selling oranges or something better than being in a factory. So I went to Florida with her. And it was interesting because they do things so different than they do in Pennsylvania. I mean, they have all kinds of beauty contests. And I was good looking, I suppose, so I did get into beauty contests. And they have all kinds of social clubs there. You know, the famous ones like the Lions Club and and so forth. And I started to dance for them. The first dance I did, I got $20 for, and I thought that was the end of the world. It was so wonderful. So I then was working all the time, this club or that club. They said, oh, she's so cute, you know, because I would do like the Irish jig, and I knew how to sew, so I made myself costumes with all kinds of Irish green and wonderful things on them, leprechauns. So one time we went over to, my mother and I were invited to Daytona Beach, the other side of Florida. It was the International Convention of Magicians. Magic.
Interesting.
So I did my dance, and I was received very nicely. And there was this older magician. By the way, I found out years later that he was so very, very famous. His name was Burling Hull, and he called himself the Great Volta. Well, when I met him, he had retired, but he invented wonderful magic acts. So he said to my mother, so I helped him with his act that night. I mean, you know, I stood in a very pretty little pose and held the end of a turban or something like that. But he came and talked to my mother and said, I have a magic act for a woman, and I would like to teach Carol that. I think she could do it very well. She has nice composure, and she's used to being in front of audiences. So I went and I stayed with he and his wife, and I learned a bit about magic. And then he put me into one of the older hangovers from vaudeville called Kemp Time. Kemp Time had two kinds of shows. One was the variety show, which I was in, and the other was the country western. And the country western had some of the most remarkable people. They had Andy Griffith. They had Elvis Presley. This was before they became that famous, obviously. And in the variety show, the most famous lady who came out of it was Virginia Mayo. And how did she get chosen by Hollywood? She was doing Pansy the Horse Act. Now, if you know Pansy the Horse Act is, it's two men in a horse suit.
Yes.
And then the girl who's the trainer, she has to be very pretty and wear nice short dresses and have a whip and go around the stage with him. But she became a movie star doing that. So that led to my learning so much about show business, and I went to New York. I finally got sick of being on tour. I went to New York, and I started to get I went everywhere. I was very, very good about going into auditions and places and letting agents know who I was. And I got some television commercials. Well, television commercials in those days, you would sit, everything was live. So the program would be live, and then there would be a tiny pause, and then the girls, like I did a lot of those Bobby Sox girls sitting in a row drinking Coca-Cola. That was one of my biggest things. And one day, I was there, and I saw a drama. And I said to myself, oh, my God, acting. Acting is so much easier than anything I've been doing. I've been killing myself, dancing and taking around magic tricks and having to transport special vanities and boxes and everything for my magic act. I said, I'm gonna be an actor. That's what I'm going to do. And from there, I went to study with Lee Strasberg. Then I got into the Actors Studio. The Actors Studio was magic in those days because they had produced Marlon Brando and Eli Wallach, Carl Malden, Ben Gazzara, so many wonderful stars. So when... just because I became a member, it's like almost every studio in Hollywood wanted me because they said, okay, hey, she's at the famous Actors Studio. She's young, she's pretty, and probably she can act. They didn't care all that much about acting, which I didn't know that until years later. So that's how it happened. And I had my choice of several films I could do, and I chose to do Giant because my friend Jimmy Dean was in it, but also because George Stevens was a great director, and I thought, I haven't really studied as long as I should have, but if I have a great director, he will help me. He will make sure I'm on the right path. So that's how it happened.
Carol Baker is with me on Book Spectrum. We've gone into the silver screen because Carol is the star of the silver screen. Of course, the author of Who Killed Big Al and three other books. You mentioned Eli Wallach and Carl Malden from the Actors Studio. After Giant, you starred with them in Baby Doll.
Yes. Well, that was something that startled all of us. First of all, I think it's a great movie. It's funny. It's beautiful. The poetry that Tennessee Williams writes is incredible. It's so beautiful. But we were banned, and the Catholic Church, the Legion of Decency, banned us, and we lost most of our play dates in America. I think it was like 94% of them. So the film has never really gotten what it deserves in America. I'd like people sometime to go back and look at it. The only place I know where it plays is Turner Classic Movies. But none of us expected what was going to happen, that we were going to be condemned and they were going to they were going to stand up in St. Peter's Cathedral and condemn us. So it was not just a shock to me, but also to Eli and to Carl and to Millie Dunnick. But Kazan and Tennessee Williams, I can't tell you how hard they took it, especially Tennessee. He was just so, so hurt, so upset. But yeah, it certainly made me a star just because my name was out there.
They put all that work into it. I can understand why they were upset. They weren't even out to shock anybody. They were trying to put together a good movie. And it is, by standards of today, it's a classic. So that's how it is. Believe me, I'd love to talk more about these. You went on to star in several Westerns, like How the West Was Won. You were a big star in Something Wild. You even were in some of the more, well, we'll say relatively modern movies. But I did enjoy seeing you in Kindergarten Cop. You got to do a lot of things in front of the screen.
Yes, I did. Yes. I never really went, although I had some movies that were about me, like Harlow, and it turned out that The Carpetbaggers became about me because that character was so spectacular. And Sylvia, Bridge to the Sun. But mainly, I wanted to be in movies where I loved the director, I loved the actors, and I wanted to be part of a company. As a matter of fact, there was a period in my career when, here we go with with the motor outside. for a period of time, I had the same agent, theatrical agent, as Audrey Hepburn. And Audrey said to him one day, "I don't understand Carol. Carol doesn't choose to do films that are about her." If you think of Audrey, all her movies were about her.
That is true. Carol Baker again with me on Book Spectrum. I'm Chris Cordani, your host. When was it that you decided, hey, I'm a writer now?
Oh, well, I never decided that, really. When I was in grade school, in Pennsylvania, we were asked to write a short story. All of the students, I think I was 8 at the time, all of the students of that age, and I won a prize from the Pittsburgh Press for my short story. So I think I always had a little bit of talent for writing, and I might have, you know, if I had had a choice of what I wanted to do, I might have started writing much earlier, and maybe that would have been my career. But I didn't have the money to sit down and write and hope a book would be published.
That makes a lot of sense. You got to make some money, Carol. You got to make the money.
Yeah, you got to do that. But also, you know, I retired from the screen because I'm 88 years old, about to become 89. And I thought, you know, I was young and pretty and all. They thought I was sexy and everything. I don't want to go on in movies and play the great, 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 great grandmother or something. But I can write. And although I don't think I could possibly get up in the mornings like I used to for films at, let's say, 5 o'clock, 4:30, 5 o'clock, and work all day and remember lines, and that would be too difficult for me. But hey, as a writer, I can sit in bed with a legal pad and pen and write. And I love writing, and I'm very excited about Who Killed Big Al. And you are so wonderful to do this interview with me. I thank you so much.
And you're wonderful to do the interview with me, too. I really appreciate you coming on Book Spectrum with us. This is, I hate to use the term, a thrilling roller coaster, but it is, because not only is the mystery itself intriguing, but the characters, the development, and what you learn about these people, and of course, Carol Baker's knowledge of poisons, where it's all worth getting this book.
Yes. Oh, dear.
Carol Baker, thank you for being with us on Book Spectrum.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. And I want all your readers, they're told not to go out anymore. And people always used to say, "I don't have time to read. Oh, I don't have time." Hey, you've got time to read now. Go back to it and see how enjoyable it is. And thank you for your kind of a program, because we've got to promote books.
There's always time to read. There really is. Exercise your brain. There we go. Once again, the book is Who Killed Big Al from Carol Baker. It's available where books are sold online and on the street. Also, there's more information and a link to where you can easily pick up the book on our website, bookspectrum.com. I'm Chris Cordani. Thank you for listening to Book Spectrum.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.